Hey, everybody, gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government can.
Good afternoon. You're listening to the Good Government Forum. We're here Monday through Friday from 8:30 to 9 a.m. and then Thursday afternoon at 1 to 2 p.m. Additionally, this radio station can be listened to online at americamatters.us, americamatters.us. This program is a discussion on the ways fraud, abuse, corruption, and extortion of government. And today, we have a three-way dialogue going with two of my friends who you've heard on this radio program before, Angel DeFazio calling in from Las Vegas and Fred Volz calling in from Carson City. And today, we are going to BITCH about the Public Utilities Commission here in the state of Nevada. Now, what you have, so let me give you a little introduction. I'll set the table here. Back on Wednesday, May 31st, a group of us got to converged, if you will, on the Public Utilities Commission office in Carson City. There were several of us from Carson City, and there were several of us from Reno that traveled down to Carson City to attend a Public Utilities Commission meeting. And then via television, you could also attend the meeting down in Las Vegas via television electronically. So down in Las Vegas, there was Angel DeFazio. And then there was another lady there in the audience. And I don't think she was associated with Angel, but she was there to complain too, to do her BITCHing about the Public Utilities Commission. So there's a stupid idea going around by stupid people, government employees making stupid decisions. They have stupid ideas about stupid things. And one of the ideas that's going around, folks, and getting scammed by the Public Utilities Commission here in the state of Nevada, and then we'll get Fred and Angel here in a minute, is a $5.9 million program between Sierra and NV Power to pay for discounted light bulbs. I mean, this is incredible. It's, you know, they want to, well, they'll tell you all about it, I'm sure, Fred and Angel. They're the experts on this. They've been BITCHing at the PUC for I don't know how many years now. Maybe they can inform us about that. But it's Fred and Angel, I want you to know that, you know, all these deadbeat, low-life, trough-feeding parasites down there at the Public Utilities Commission. I went online this morning. I went to Transparent. Oh, first I went to the PUC website online, and I got all the managers there, their names. And then I went to TransparentNevada.com, and I wrote down, I typed in their names, Joe Reynolds, Ann So-and-so, Anne-Marie Cuneo, Stephanie Mullen, Donald Lamojo, these deadbeat, low-life, trough-feeding, parasite government employees, every single one of them, and I wrote down their annual compensation at TransparentNevada.com. So maybe at some point in time today we can go over this compensation, and you won't believe how much money they're being paid, these deadbeat, low-life, trough-feeding parasites. See, folks, and just one more thing, one more sense, and then we'll turn it over. What you have in government, you have these government employees, okay? Every one of these government employees are so stupid. You want to know how stupid they are? They're so stupid that they can't get a job working anyplace else. So what they do is they go to work for government. So what you have in government is a bunch of stupid people with stupid ideas making stupid decisions about stupid things. I mean, you want to know how stupid it is? It is so stupid that they don't even know how stupid they are. That's how stupid they are, okay? Got that? All government employees, every single one of them, at the federal level, the state level, the local level, the county level, all these government employees, every single one of them are a bunch of deadbeat, low-life, trough-feeding parasites. The only reason any of these people have a job is because the government can extort money out of the productive private sector where people actually work for a living. They then take and siphon off, they steal, they confiscate, they extort money over into the deadbeat, low-life government sector to pay for these deadbeat, low-life, trough-feeding parasites, these stupid people with stupid ideas making stupid decisions about stupid things. So, Fred and Angel, why don't you take us away and tell us what is wrong with the Public Utilities Commission and what's your BITCHing about today?
Well, there is certainly plenty to talk about, Mon. Good afternoon to the audience and to Angel and to you. Perhaps the best way to start with this is just to sort of give an overview about what the PUC in theory is doing and a few of the ways that they do business. I think that would help the audience understand some of the issues that we have that have, unfortunately have not been resolved because the PUC likes to essentially operate on its own without having to answer to anybody. And it seems to be able to do that. And just yesterday, I'm going to tell you in a minute about a really unbelievable example of bad management, arrogance, and just unbridled power that really should not be allowed to happen. There's something needs to be done about this, and sooner rather than later. And we'll have some suggestions at the end of the show about what people can do. But the Public Utilities Commission is supposed to balance the interests of the ratepayers, that's basically everybody in this state, business owners, individuals, for fair and low-cost utility provision, natural gas, electricity, against the interest of the utility companies who want to make money and satisfy their shareholders. So that sounds reasonable in the abstract. But how this commission operates and how it is staffed is really a poster child of bad government. We have tons of agencies, as everybody knows, doing all this various work supposedly in the public interest. Well, at the PUC, we have three commissioners. They are appointed unilaterally by the governor of the state, whoever that happens to be, for four-year terms. The commissioners we have right now, one of them just left. He was in the renewable energy industry previously, and he went back to it in Reno. We have a woman who has no regulated utility experience, who was brought in last October. And then we have the governor's personal attorney, who had zero utility experience. He could barely spell it. He used to be the before that, a prosecutor, and before that, he was a high school English teacher. So we have people being appointed to these positions because there's no oversight who really don't have the slightest idea about the rules, the regulations, and yet they're in these positions making decisions that impact all of us because we have to pay not only for them but for the utility services that we need. So then who appoints the executive director? You mentioned her earlier, Stephanie Mullen. That's the commission. And the commission almost 2 years ago appointed a woman, Stephanie Mullen, who is statutorily unqualified. She's really illegally in the position, been brought to the governor's attention. He did nothing. It was brought to Mr. Reynolds' attention when he was the governor's personal attorney. He did nothing then, and he's done nothing since he arrived at the PUC last October. And the statute specifically says the person should be knowledgeable and experienced in public administration and fiscal management, also knowledgeable in the areas of utility regulation by the commission. And it's a must be. It's not shall or may or with any wiggle words. So no attorney can turn this around and say, oh, but she worked for a jewelry store as their human resources person, or she worked at a property management company in San Diego, or she worked at a summer camp, which was her last position, as a low-level administrative manager dealing with policies and procedures and paying bills. None of these job experiences nor her education with a BA in business give her any of this experience to qualify for the position. But no one in state government has been willing to call this out and say, this should not continue, she should not be there earning close to $120,000 a year in base salary. Then it goes into why is that important to you? Again, I mentioned it before. It's because they set the rates that you have to pay for electricity and natural gas in this state, and they basically set them on their own. They don't have to report to anybody but themselves. So how do they operate? And here's yesterday's agenda meeting. the one that Mon referenced earlier, he attended a couple of weeks before, was a beaut, because the executive director, without any documentation to back it up, increased the mill tax, which is how the PUC is largely funded. It's buried inside of your utility rates, so you won't see it on your bill, but it's there, and you're paying it every month that you write a check to pay for electricity and natural gas. They increased that tax by 15.8% in one fell swoop, and they increased their personnel budget by 24%, or $2.2 million plus for the upcoming fiscal year beginning July 1st. I asked during the public comment period, where was the documentation and the backup that was saying, what's the productivity of the existing staff? Why can't the existing staff do more? What are the person-by-person salary increases beyond the state-mandated cost of living increase that Sandoval approved of 3%? They didn't indicate the number of new people they planned to hire or for what functions and pay levels. They didn't indicate whether these new people are going to be permanent or temporary. There was no explanation for why temporary staff couldn't be used. There was no effective recruitment mechanism because they've cried before that they can't find people, but they don't even advertise in all the usual logical spots for positions such as railway inspectors, and that came out during their budget hearings with the legislature. They have no training plan for the newbies, and there's no budget allocation for computers, office space, or other office supplies. So anybody running a business where they have to make a profit or they don't survive would have to work through all of this stuff and justify why they would be spending and wanting this kind of an increase. The PUC doesn't have to do that, though. They can just arbitrarily slap on this extra money, and we have absolutely no recourse. And when all these questions were brought up, Joe Reynolds, the new commissioner and chair, essentially just blew them all off. He didn't ask his executive director anything, told her she'd done a good job, and proceeded to vote without asking any questions whatsoever. That's the sort of arrogance that we have going on at this agency. And it's a great example, and like I said, it's as recent as yesterday. So there's the real question becomes out of this, do we even need a PUC, which costs us over $15 million a year just for the agency, but there are tens of millions of dollars that we're also having to cover for ratepayer reimbursed costs at NVE and in Carson City and Vegas, Southwest Gas, because they have to produce thousands and thousands of pages of documents and spreadsheets to comply with what the PUC has demanded they want. All of this costs money from high-priced lawyers, accountants, financial analysts, et cetera. And we're paying for all of this. And it's not doing anything to lower the rates. In fact, the rates are steadily going up. And we've seen that in the bill inserts just this year alone. It's up over 8% for electricity. So that kind of gives you a construct of what the PUC is supposed to do, how they're structured, and one of the most glaring examples I could come up with of bad management and bad stewardship of the public trust. And at that point, I would turn it over to Angel, and she can tell you a few more stories about some of the people we've been dealing with who, shall we say, have the greatest of disdain for the public and really just don't want to have to deal with us, period.
Good morning, Mon. Hi, Fred. Thank you for the intro. Well, in celebration of what would have been Dean Martin's 100th birthday, which was last week, and today being Throwback Thursday, let's revive his celebrity roast as a luau, with the spit being stacked with some of the more unworthy members of the PUC, such as the newly anointed general counsel, Garrett Weir. I hope he has his flame retardant suit on today. Now, the current chair, Joey Reynolds, kind of reminds me of the character in Men in Black, where there was a big guy, and upon the autopsy, his face plate opened up, and there was this tiny little creature that was no bigger than the creature's forehead. That's our Joey, all fluff. There isn't enough time to fully explain the maze of deception, incompetence, and protection of the PUC. So let me do it really quickly via Godfather movies analogy. We have the self-proclaimed Don Corleone, a.k.a. Reynolds, when in fact he's more like Fredo, the incompetent, unqualified, untrustworthy son that isn't qualified to be the Godfather. Then we have wannabe Tom Hagen, the Constellari slash attorney. Thus, that would be Garrett Weir, who isn't qualified in that position in this family either. They are so feather-bedded with attorneys, it's not even funny. That means that they have more than necessary. Even though this statement is normally associated with unions, it's still applicable to the PUC. Their so-called fair and equitable assignment of rates is nothing short of a shakedown, acting like the bagman for utilities. The only way this joke of a state agency can ever be transparent is if you're Superman or Superwoman and have X-ray vision, as initially our own little Kim Jong-un, a.k.a. robotic Joey Reynolds, used to state ad nauseum the openness and transparency of the agency has now been shrouded with more mystery than where Jimmy Hoffa is buried. Now, to add to the abba-dabba of the PUC and the hubris they exude, Reynolds went on the record on November 5th of last year, adopting ethical standards of conduct, citing these standards are meant to help guide the commission in balancing judicial and legislative roles. The integrity of the PUC is essential to maintaining the trust of the public. Right. So much for that. It looks like Joey needs to go to confession for that statement. Now, on to my favorite mouthpiece, Garrett Weir. His legal experience was as a legislative extern for 6 months. He did a short stint at the PUC for 3 months as a legal intern, 5 months in the regulatory arena, then back to the PUC as an admin attorney slash legal case manager. And then he went to admin attorney. Now, he became the assistant general counsel in July of 2012 to November of last year, when he beat out the highly qualified Kate Marshall for the general counsel position. I mean, why have one with the credentials of Kate Marshall, the former state treasurer, federal law office experience, when you have an insider, a.k.a. Weir? That entire open call for the GC position was made to look like there was no one in the wings, when in fact, at some point by of last year, Garrett was being referred to as the acting GC. Now, while Garrett Baby thinks he's the embodiment of TV's Perry Mason, has real-world interpersonal skills are really highly constrained. The two short stints he did as a legal extern in the regulatory agency surely did not qualify him for the I-know-everything type of person he projects himself to be. So with the new job title comes a boost in salary. Of course, that's to be expected. But you're going to love this, Mon. In addition to his overcompensated salary, he further takes advantage of the ratepayers by driving his little electric Nissan Leaf car from Reno to Carson for work and plugs it into the building's charging station. Now, every other employee has to pay for their fuel to get back and forth to work. Secret little bat boy gets a free charge 5 days a week. Doesn't matter that the energy used to charge his personal car is paid for out of the VIG, commonly referred to as the stealth mill tax. At what point does concern for the ratepayers' finances come into play? Ever. He's out for himself, as he probably thinks the cost for the energy to power his car. He's saving the environment, and therefore he's justified. Hardly. He was so concerned he could carpool, but he's not that concerned with the environment. Let's look at the serious lack of real-time experience in the area of conflict resolution, which I personally can attest to, as he has a gaping hole in this legal education. When it comes to mediation conflict issues, it's standard operating procedure to be neutral so that the parties are not put on the defense. Well, with Garrett, he claimed he wanted dialogue with me via emails and phone calls, as subject was supposed to be my problems with the PUC operation. Apparently, Garrett believes the PUC is perfection personified. Yet, the PUC refuses to acknowledge and address the animosity that the public has towards it. They seem to think, upon hiring, that they're deified as gods, and the ratepayers are not worthy of talking to them regarding utility issues. Doesn't matter that these myopic, egotistical employees can learn from ratepayers who have real-world experience, in addition to a fair amount of knowledge of PUC issues. Since September of 2015, the PUC has halted their quarterly administrative agenda meetings, where Barbie, the executive director's predecessor, would give updates. They removed them, so they are not acting in a transparent manner or in the public interest, as they're expecting the public to blindly accept their stealth activities without demanding accountability. They refuse to understand they work for us. We are their employees, and we have a right to know what's going on. So their refusal to hold these admin meetings, our only other recourse is to submit open records requests, which they take a cherry-picking approach. If they want to give it out, they will. If not, they focus charges to stifle disclosure of actions, financial disbursements, and even though we're paying for the creation of these records in the first place. Now, back in February, Garrett arbitrarily and capriciously decided he was not going to produce any of my open records requests until June 1st, when the statute requires you to respond within 5 days. So what they did was they responded in 5 days saying, aha, you're waiting until June 1st. request was still being generated. Every one of his states need their standard boilerplate response. They will be hardly the height of efficiency and responsiveness. Yet, this was a poorly crafted, concerted, mendacious vendetta wanting open and transparency. Gary keeps forgetting, I'm an Italian from Brooklyn, and we don't back down. Now, on October 26th, just last month, Dan Haggerty, an admin attorney, sent me the following email. I'm writing to inform you of an update to your pending records request with the PUC. As the commission has a request, we have determined it would require the use of extraordinary resources. As such, the commission has an estimate for your records request. Please see the attached letter, which includes a more detailed explanation. The letter came wanting $215 extortion fee. First of all, none of these employees ever respond when you have questions, so why bother on the letter telling us, please contact us if you have any questions? Now, each of the requests from February on were mostly quick screenshots, which take a minimal amount of time to fill. All of a sudden, an updated phone list can't be quickly provided because they intentionally removed the staff phone list and email list from their website. So we have no idea who's doing what there. Currently, just references a secretary. Now, they claimed the prior phone list was sufficient, but with all their personnel changes, that wasn't a truthful response. Another example of suppression and transparency activity is that the PUC is required by statute to provide free of charge anything to open meetings, such as the supporting materials and any type of recording. So a couple of months ago, they went from a limited number of live audio spaces over the internet to unlimited video streaming. This was their transparency. Now, this doesn't change lack of participation and two-way conversation between the PUC and the public. But then again, they never receive queries from the public. Mum is their motto. Since I couldn't open their archive video file, nothing records request for a copy, and they refused to provide it. Even when informed that downloading it from their archives didn't allow viewing of the only the utility agenda meetings are archived, even though most of the meetings now are live video stream. Since Weir is the buck stops here person, he is culpable for denying access to records. If he doesn't want to be transparent, like his chair Joey saying, he should go find a new job where he has to go out and get billable hours and work for his salary. Now, in a normal law office, attorneys and paralegals are required to keep track of their time for billing purposes. When I was a paralegal, we used a program called Time Matters. Prior to Joey and Weir's ascendancy to their current positions, the PUC used to have a buck slip showing who drafted an order, then who did the legal review. But bear in mind that in October of last year, unqualified Joey was brought in as chair, which, as Fred said, had no utility regulation. He was assigned an admin attorney who was basically as uneducated as he was in the field. So the review should have been highly scrutinized. But with Joey at the helm, there is absolutely no proof that any order has in fact been reviewed by Weir's department. Even when there was a buck slip, you had the drafter of the order actually signing off for the general counsel's office. It's inconceivable that the time it takes to place one's initial, a date and a time, on a piece of paper was so labor-intensive it couldn't be done by the appropriate person. Again, no checks. These are audio streamed, so every employee has the ability to watch it, as both offices have video conference hookups. Their employees come out of their office to sit in the audience to watch, while they complain ad nauseum about how overworked they are. What? They can't have it streaming on their computer in the background while they're doing their work? Now, back in February of 2015, when the Sunset Subcommittee was reviewing them, Fred and I brought up their failure to stream the audio for everything they were doing. So Senator Stettelmeyer suggested that he would err on the side of open and transparency to stream the other meetings as well. Voila! Now, during this legislative session, Joey, Barrett, and Barbie kept on the legislative meeting. Joey, who is not supposed to have an opinion, anything to contribute, but they contributed was not really that substantial. So time in the world, they wanted to be seen at the legislature. As a ratepayer, I'm not paying for so-called overworked executives to act like an entourage for someone who had no right to take a position on a bill. Okay, I'm going to turn this over now to Fred to talk about open and transparency.
Angel's given a lot of great examples that we've witnessed firsthand about the arrogant behavior of this agency. And I'll just give you a few more to sort of drive the point home further. From my perspective, a truly service-oriented business attempts to accommodate its customers by any reasonable means.
Okay, thanks.
But what we have at the PUC is something far different and an attitude that just doesn't quit about trying to keep the public at bay. For example, the state open meeting law allows the public to comment on each action item on a particular agenda that's been noticed. But the PUC, not wanting any more public comment than it can possibly stand, limits it to 3 minutes at the beginning and the end of each of the agenda, and doesn't allow you to do it on the action item, which is the bare minimum of what the state open meeting law requires. The public has been prohibited from submitting evidence or actively participating in hearings where there are contested issues about rates and regulations that will impact them, claiming that they don't have any knowledge or evidence worth considering. When questions are supposedly asked in contested cases by the parties that are allowed to participate, we can't even see what the questions are, much less the answers. They're all considered to be top secret, and we're just supposed to take it on faith as ratepayers that they're asking all the questions they should be. And utilities with repeat outages do not have to publicly disclose this information or, more importantly, the remedies they're employing to fix recurring outages. This is all supposedly top secret in this state, thanks to the PUC. We have, as I mentioned earlier, multiple rate increases. You'll see yellow and white and pink inserts in each one of your utility bills. And basically, there's no cumulative accounting for how much the bills are going up and, in the rare case, going down. That's been suggested now several times to the PUC. They've done absolutely nothing with that. They haven't tasked the utilities with coming up with, say, a five-year look back to see what has actually happened to people's rates and how unaffordable is utility provision becoming because of the various decisions of the PUC. People who used to visit the PUC for meetings with its employees used to have to sign in and out at a paper logbook, both in Las Vegas and Carson City. This has been dispensed with out of the blue. So the PUC doesn't really have to disclose who they're meeting with and what they might be talking about or what we can surmise. They claim it's because so many family members and friends are coming in and they don't want to keep track of them. Well, they claimed last October, and Mr. Reynolds in particular, that they had to move staff offices around for security purposes, but they didn't have any budget for it, and they didn't have any sort of a plan for what they were trying to do that they were willing to disclose. They refused to comply with an open records request to disclose that information. And basically, as things stand in Carson City, there's absolutely no way that anybody who wanted to go in there and do something couldn't access the building and nobody would be the wiser, given the layout of the building. There's no way somebody can go upstairs, they can go down the main hallway, and where they move the reception area has absolutely no knowledge that the persons might be at either place. It's just, it's ludicrous. If they'd had a security person looking at it, which they claim they did from one of the state agencies, they never would have permitted what they did. When there isn't evidence to support what the PUC wants to do, even though it claims to act in a quasi-judicial manner and supposedly gathers evidence and testimony, it just spouts the platitude of in the public interest, just like they use open and transparent at the drop of a hat, and proceed to implement whatever they have in mind. They've never been able to define that or explain it in any reasonable way. They just invoke it, and essentially it's a summary judgment, making a mockery of evidence and testimony. And then two other things. The PUC used to publicly report the multiple grants that it applied for, such as to hand out plastic hats for kids at home shows to try and promote the agency. But all this activity has been removed from public view since Joe Reynolds arrived last October. And finally, if you fear that the PUC employees don't get to travel on the public dime, not to worry. They travel to Lake Tahoe for catamaran cruises during the business day when they should be in professional association workshops. They go to Washington, D.C., New Orleans, Denver, and multiple other destinations, supposedly going to workshops. But they've never taken the obvious step of delegating one person to attend, gathering the information that's necessary, and then sharing that with the coworkers. That would be the efficient way, assuming there is no video conferencing available for online classes. But they don't consider that either. And the kicker is, and this is state policy now, which they're happy to proceed with, the lucky state travelers, where the ratepayers are paying for the airfare, get to keep the frequent flyer miles for their own personal use. When the ratepayers are indeed covering the airfare, they don't have to give that back to the state, as most businesses require these days. So those are just some other examples, and Angel's going to talk some more about the musical job syndrome that seems to be afoot at the moment with the PUC.
Okay, well, we have 13 minutes. We have 13 minutes left. We have 13 minutes left.
Okay. Remember the game you used to play where you had to guess who you were predicated on the sticker they placed on your forehead? It seems that the PUC is reliving those days with their employees' jobs. They are, as of June 10th, down to 89 employees from the mid-90s back in October of last year. Now, you have to ask yourself, if you were going to do a job change, you would do a lateral or upward move, right? Especially when it comes to compensation. A salary is what drives most people into a position. Before I go into that, I have to discuss the incredible meteoric rise in the PUC of Mahanan Quintero. Now, back in 08, she came on board as an admin assistant 3. In 09 until February of this year, she was the executive assistant to the PUC's director of regulations department. Now, sometime prior to February 28th of this year, she became an operations analyst. What is this job about? There is no record of this title in the unclassified listings. Now, is Barbie channeling Trump regarding job creation? So now, let's fast forward to June 9th. She's now listed as the legal case manager, according to the Nevada Employees Directory. So within a span of 5 months, she rose from executive assistant to legal case manager. Now, here's where the problem with this position change raises numerous red flags. The position of legal case manager requires a Juris Doctorate from an accredited law school with a preference for Nevada bar admission. Now, per the PUC's former executive director during her 2015 legislative budget meeting, on December 8th of last year, the PUC posted a job opportunity for an attorney/legal case manager with this necessary educational qualification, along with these key areas of responsibility: draft legal notices, orders, and other legal documents, interprets relevant laws, regulations, policies, provides preliminary legal advice to the commission and utility officer. So, did she go to law school online? Now, in order to go to law school, you need an undergrad degree. Now, Quintero was involved with the massive homeowner association scandal in Las Vegas. She did a plea bargain that was executed on January 12th of 2013. And at that time, it was referenced she was a loan processor and notary. And then she was placed on 2 years probation in early May of 2015. Since there's no requirement of a degree to be a loan processor, how did this rise occur? There is a public reference to her going to UNLV, but she's not listed as an alumni. Did she do online or evening classes to get the required undergrad degree for law school? With the normal law school education, you're looking at a solid 2 to 3 years. So exactly how was this law education obtained online? Did she attend an American Bar Association accredited school? There is nothing wrong with people wanting to achieve more knowledge, but this is very interesting. Let's go on the assumption that the school was ABA accredited. Would it be accepted by the Nevada Bar for licensing? If not, was this obtained so she could top out as an admin attorney, which doesn't require bar admission? Is she in fact qualified for this position? I guess this is going to be another where in the world is Carmen Sandiego mystery. Now, because of time constraints, I won't go into all the other migrations of jobs for PUC employees, but if you'd like to have Fred and I back to do part two of this, we would be more than willing.
Yeah, we can have you on for another Thursday. Maybe next Thursday. We'll talk about that.
Okay. Mon, I wanted to sort of wrap this up there. I wanted to go into the energy efficiency, but we can save that for another time. Basically, I'd like to suggest to the audience that if they individually are as outraged as we are about how this rogue agency has the free rein to do what it wants with effectively zero oversight, what actions can the people in the public who are supposed to be the beneficiaries of this agency, not the victims, take? You know, what action plan can they go forward with? And I'd like to suggest that they consider first the elimination of the PUC altogether and task the much more efficient Bureau of Consumer Protection with overseeing what's going to soon become a very, very wild and woolly situation of utility provision once the Energy Choice Initiative likely passes in the November 2018 election for a second time. Secondly, I'd like to encourage folks to contact their legislators, and they can find those on the legislature's website through a search, and then let them know that you're not happy with how the PUC has abjectly failed to serve the public interest and has an agenda filled only with self-perpetuation and maintaining the status quo. And at the same time that they're communicating with their state senator or assembly member, they need to tell them that the PUC needs to be eliminated and any oversight tasks reassigned to the much more efficient BCP. All the state boards and commissions, your audience may not know this, need to have appointments reviewed by some part of the legislature. No governor, not the current one or any others, should have unilateral appointment powers to dole out goodies to friends, contributors, and those in a position to give them future employment or to be yes votes for what they want on these boards and commissions. We need good people, impartial people, people who are interested in doing a good job, not there just because they know somebody in the good old boy, good old girl network. And we'd like to come back, and we'd like to suggest that Mon invite Joe Reynolds onto the show with the three of us, and we can go over some of these problems and concerns and inefficiencies and see what he has to say as a response, because he's been totally uncommunicative about this. Fact is, I ran into him at the legislature, said, "Hello, Mr. Reynolds." He immediately did a 180-degree turn and bolted off into the distance. He didn't say a word. This is not the sort of behavior you expect from a supposedly experienced attorney and somebody who's in an executive position of a state agency. And finally, I'd like to encourage the audience to show up at the PUC's upcoming annual consumer session in Reno and let Joe Reynolds know in no uncertain terms that you individually and collectively are unhappy with the way he's running this agency and expect constructive changes to be made without delay. And we'll be happy to let Mon know the specifics when they're announced about the meeting time and date. It usually is at the Washoe County Commission Chambers, but we'll see about this year. So he might be able to mention it during a future broadcast at the same time for the people who remember what we were talking about today. The meeting will probably be held in the next couple of months, just FYI.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, keep us updated. There's 4 minutes left. Can I start asking a few questions?
Please.
Are we through?
Please. Go for it.
Okay, I'm going to give the compensation for the top administrators at Public Utilities Commission, TransparentNevada.com. Joel Reynolds, total compensation, $160,000. I'm rounding here to the nearest thousand. There's a gal there named Ann. Last name starts with P-O-N-G-R-A-C-Z, however you pronounce that. $165,000. Then there's Anne Marie Cuneo, $150,000. Stephanie Mullen, $149,000. Donald Lamojo, $144,000. So, Fred, quickly tell the audience about Stephanie Mullen, her background prior to coming to the PUC.
Yes.
And this gal makes $149,000 a year, ripping you off, folks. Go ahead.
Yes. She is completely unqualified from the position. She's illegally holding it. As I said earlier, she used to be a personnel manager for a small jewelry store chain in San Diego. Then she worked for a property management company also in San Diego. Then she moved up to Lake Tahoe and became a very low-level administrative manager for the Stanford Summer Camp on the South Shore. And then miraculously, Her salary is doubled, and she's hired by the PUC, even though she doesn't fit the requirements. And the main reason this happened was the other equally unqualified candidate was found to have had a conflict of interest with the general counsel in place before Garrett Weir, that she did not disclose during the interview process. She was part of the interview committee, and so the commission, paralyzed with fear that they'd have a problem or that there'd be some sort of insider dealing, chose Mullen instead of reposting the position and attracting some candidates who actually had the statutory requirements necessary to do the job.
Okay, next time.
Oh, just one other comment. We believe that Mullen has had to be shored up by all the existing staff because she doesn't even know where the ladies' room is at this point. Still, 2 years into the job, she is clueless, as demonstrated by yesterday's nonsense with this $2.2 million increase in personnel.
Okay, we have minute 41 left. I need 30 seconds at the end. Any comments about this stupid, idiotic light $5.9 million light bulb plan that the PUC is putting forth?
Well, Fred was going to talk about that in the next segment.
Just quickly.
So, if you want to have us on June 29th, we can really go into detail on that.
Okay. Okay.
But just
okay, go ahead, Fred. Anything
for your audience today is this is the nanny state writ large. People can buy their own light bulbs. We don't need to have a subsidy, new program, or a continuation of an existing one to tell people how to save energy. They know to turn the light switch off. They know to turn their thermostats up or down depending on the season. They don't need subsidies for light bulbs. And the poor people are having to subsidize this just as well as the affluent people.
Okay, that's enough. Okay, I'll take it to the end. Thanks. Let's talk. Give me a call, and we'll talk about their next get-together. Folks, thanks for listening to the Good Government Forum. We'll be back again tomorrow morning with Alex Newman and then talking about the global warming climate change scam and interesting information there. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you later.
Instead of getting fired, hey, we'll give ourselves a raise. The government.